Good morning and welcome to the Thursday edition of Byers & Company. We have Tony Brown for Sheriff in studios, Coach Ron James, and we'll have our final giveaway for the tickets to see Brad Underwood tonight at the Hickory Point Golf Club. Byers & Company starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here on kind of a gloomy-looking Thursday morning, although it's light out now, finally. I don't know about the rest of you. The thought of winter. Aren't you supposed to go to, like, Arizona or Florida or something at a certain age? Don't they mandate
Hawaii.
That?
Hawaii.
Is that
Hawaii,
what you're going to stay there? I don't mean vacation. I mean, like, the whole winter.
I'd like to if I could get my wife to stay there that long.
You need to work on that. All right. Well, we're back here on a Thursday, and in just a few short days, we will be going to the polls and deciding a lot of things. And I think people get worried about blue wave, red wave, Congress. I Rodney will be with us tomorrow. I get all of that, but there's so many more important races on the ticket. And I think why there's so much excitement being garnered about the April race is that, you know, people realize that your city council, your school board, your sheriff, you know, your clerk, you know, these are folks that have a lot more impact on your day-to-day life than ever. And yet the other stuff gets all the attention or sucks all the oxygen out of the conversation. And particularly the way things have become so increased, the rhetoric is just toxic now. I mean, you can't have an agreement to disagree on anything. We label each other names and we call signs and we mob people in restaurants. And then now crazies are sending, you know, bombs or at least what we think are bombs. It's nuts. You got family members not speaking to each other over a presidential election. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think by and large, the race for sheriff has shown you that people can still sort of have disagreements and agree to disagree and be friends at the end of it. I think that there's a reason why people have said to me over and over and over again, well, you know what? We really feel like whoever wins, we're going to have a great sheriff. And so I think people can still have this civil conversation because you know where this doesn't exist, this rhetoric? The rest of your life. Oh, yeah. Everything else you do, you go to a United Way board meeting or you go to the Girl Scouts thing tonight or right. You go see Brad Underwood. There's going to be black and white and Democrat, Republican. You know what no one's doing? Yelling at each other. They're right. There to see the Illini coach.
Correct.
So the only place you see this is in politics. So, yes, the president, okay, I agree. I mean, I think it's ridiculous, the behavior, but so is the media. And so is both parties and just this idea of if you want to scream at people and yell at people, I think that's why they have a hard time with polls anymore because I think a lot of people just go, I'm not getting in that argument. I'm going to go vote and do my thing, and I don't need to answer your questions.
Exactly. Whatever I do in the behind that curtain is my business.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Tony Brown joins us. He's running for sheriff. But by and large, I want to ask you right off the bat about this other thing and if you want to talk about it because I do not. Mm-hmm. I knew about it. I'm not accusing anyone of leaking this. I don't know who leaked it, but I will tell you it's interesting that it was not sent to me. It was put in an envelope, slid under the door of the Decatur Tribune office in the dark of the night, as Paul Osborne described.
Oh, wow.
I want to give you time if you want to talk about it, but I frankly have no interest. It's out there. Mm-hmm. How many times does an average law enforcement officer get accused of doing something in their career?
Quite often.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the nature of the beast. You have individuals that have other reasons or agendas in order to get something or to try to take attention off themselves. So
the bad thing is, though, this takes so long to process, right?
It does.
I mean, because you had to live with this
six
knowing
years.
You didn't have anything to hide, and then that was what the ruling was, that you didn't do this. And yet, why would it take so long for a longstanding, respected member of our law enforcement community to have his name cleared in something like this?
It's the process.
Yeah.
Trust the process.
That has to be frustrating as hell.
It's very frustrating. But like I said, I trust the process. Everything worked out the way it should have. And we just move on.
All right. So who would have had access to that report? I mean, did you?
Anyone has. I mean, you go to their website, you can pull all that up. It's all public record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't. I don't like the way it was delivered. To me, that's exactly what we're talking about with all this other stuff. And most of this race has not been that way.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm glad that that cloud has finally been removed.
You and me both.
Yeah. I bet. Okay. So, most part though, what have you found out on the campaign trail, if you will, over the last couple of years of leading up to this? Have you found most people just to be like I was describing earlier? Just they want the best sheriff.
Yeah, they do. I've been very fortunate to be in this community my entire life and establish relationships the entire time I've been here. And it just, I was just talking to someone last night, and I was like, wow, how time flies. Because I remember back in 1990 when I had my sheriff's interview with then Sheriff Lee Holzapfel, and that question was asked of me as far as where did I see my career, and I told him to be sitting in the seat you're sitting in, and it's here now. As far as the, got 12 days left, and we'll find out how the results shake out.
Yeah, and so what have you? What do people ask you? I mean, is there sort of something that stretches across demographics? You know, that people are concerned with the same sort of things.
They are individuals. You have, and we've been very blessed here in this community when it comes to the way law enforcement is viewed. We could do better, and you have still a lot of the national rhetoric. It filters down is here as yeah. well. But it's about relationship building, getting trust. And in order to do that, you need to feel comfortable talking to individuals and put yourself out there.
All right, talk to me a little bit about community policing. And that's a phrase that gets thrown mm-hmm. out there, and it means a lot of different mm-hmm. things. But when we were growing up,
right.
you go to Longview, and there were cops in golf shirts, yes. and everybody knew their names.
Yes.
They called them by their first
right.
name. We didn't have – I mean, we had maybe mistrust, mm-hmm. but there wasn't the level of – sort of divisive, you know, that this is bad, this is good. I mean, when did we lose that in law enforcement? It seems like we took a different direction.
We have, and you're talking about those Longview officers. I was one of
I
them.
I know.
And enjoyed it to no end, but you was building relationships. And I think because, you know, some of the things in the law enforcement community, many times people don't put themselves out there. A lot of times individuals have problems with individual correcting them or voicing their opinion, and we need to slow down, take the time, and try to explain that to individuals. And just like you said earlier, sometimes we need to agree to disagree.
Yeah, I think law and order is important.
It is.
And I don't mind, you know, I know everybody thinks that we've militarized the police, and I want every man and woman that's out there on the job to have all the protection that modern technology offers. And them going home safe to me is priority number one.
Right.
Going home to their families, or else no one will ever get into this as a career.
Right.
And you won't attract better cops, mm-hmm. you'll get worse.
Right.
You know, because I think that's what's happened to politicians.
And that's what we need. And we need better people. Who's better going to take care of your community than people that are from here that has a vested interest?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to do a better job to make sure we're out there and actually open up. I mean, a lot of people for years always thought law enforcement was this secret society, and it's not. We're people just like everyone else, and I think that's where we need to do better as far as in law enforcement stance as well as the community to communicate with one another and let everyone see what's going on. And, you know, we're just people, and to let them know that I have a family just like you, and we could eat at a restaurant together or what have you, and we could have those decent conversations. And take the time to, when you're serving your community, those are the individuals you're representing, you need to listen.
Okay, so you've been through all of these different phases, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what happens in life. We try this and we move
right.
this direction, and a lot of that's sort of mandated by lawmakers, and, you know, you get grants if you do this. Or I mean, I think sometimes we've forgotten that diffusing stuff is a whole lot better than coming in and just stopping something cold.
Yes.
And that's a lost art, maybe, with the younger officers.
It is. And this is something that I specialize in. I went to actually a certified trainer, went to procedural justice, and also fair and impartial policing. Fair and impartial policing is bias-based training. And I tell everyone, every last one of us has a bias. You know, you have some, you know, that don't like someone because, like Brian, we don't have hair.
Yeah.
You know, you have some people for something else. And everyone, it doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you human. Also, another one is procedural justice. And it's just basically talking about how it's something that we do every day. And that's just treating people with respect and have conversations and give people a voice, be impartial, be transparent. We have to do that. That's all it is, just being human.
It is. It's a tough gig for mm-hmm. a sheriff's deputy, for a police officer. I mean, because people also have to know that if it gets too hot, that this person's got to have to be the one that shuts it down. You know? I mean, so there's a balance.
We had a perfect example of that on the courthouse steps.
Yeah.
And we did. And when we had the individuals, and that was giving the individuals a voice.
Yeah.
And I look at it, Sheriff Snyder, I, you know, respect and love him to no end. He could have actually chose anyone to stand on those courthouse steps, but he chose me to stand on the courthouse steps in the community. And I appreciate that. Had the opportunity to step there with Reverend Carson, with Mayor Moore, and many other leaders within this community in order to put that whole situation to an end.
And that was after the police
officer-involved shooting
that happened. And our community did handle that in a way different way than a lot of other communities.
And we've been very blessed to have such the the teamwork that we have in this community. We talk about the alert, you know, team, which I'm a part of.
Yeah.
And to have a united front, you know, usually you'll see a situation like that where you just may see the police chief, you may just see the sheriff, you may see the mayor, but you don't see individuals within the community. And this is something that we've actually done. We've actually grabbed people within the community and respected individuals within the community, and it's a united front.
All right. Now, not everyone knows this about you, but you like to take on these projects. Yes. You grab these kids with loud mouths and kind of go, okay, you're going to do something about this in life, or are you just going to spout off? Exactly. You've done a lot of that behind the scenes. Why is that important to you?
Well, you have to. That's our future. We have to invest in our future. I always tell people the most valuable thing you can give anyone, don't cost you a dime, and that's your time. None of us have ever gotten anywhere where we are in life without the help of someone else. You don't know what impact you may have on an individual's life. And to me, the greatest reward I can ever receive is someone coming to me later on and say, you know what, because of you and that conversation you had with me, it's changed my life. And I often tell people, when you go to a cemetery, you see the beginning date and you see the end. In the middle is that dash. That dash is your life. How do you want your dash to be remembered?
Yeah. All right. So what have you not liked about running? I mean, because you guys aren't really – I never think of candidates for sheriff as sort of politicians per se. I don't think most people care one whit whether it's an R or a D next to the sheriff. I just think people want the sheriff.
Right.
They want the person they think that they like, that they think is the most qualified. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that go into it. I just don't think it's a partisan thing.
No, I don't either. The thing that I'm not going to say there's nothing about about running that I don't like. It's a lot of work. Also, the strain it actually takes on your family, the relationships, because, you know, you as a candidate, you signed up to run as a person, but your family has taken that on as well, and they suffer as well. So those are some of the things that we look at that actually suffer behind that.
All right, how fortunate have we been regardless of what happens on election day, to have Sheriff Buffett and all of the stuff that has gone into fixing that department. Not that that department needed to fix from an internal perspective, but just not the county didn't have the funds to do X, Y, or Z. All of the work that may or may not even be publicly known that he has done with infrastructure and just trying to set that office up to be better for the next person.
We have a lot of other communities, I guarantee, is envious of us.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right, it's infrastructure. To make sure that we be accountable. That way we can actually serve our community in better ways, to make sure that we, as a sheriff's office, could be more professional. At the end of the day, it's about service, and you have to have the right tools. And he has given us that opportunity to make sure we actually have the right tools in our tool bag to serve this community.
Yeah. You know, I know for some people that was a strange thing, you know, for him to be sheriff. But I got to tell you,
the best thing in the world.
I know the if you know his personality, he fits right into what we were talking about earlier, about listening to people, about talking to people, about communicating with people.
Right.
You see him on that one-on-one level, and no one cares how much money he's giving.
No, and that's exactly I told him just yesterday. I said, you know, I love you. And I'm being serious. Because of his heart. He has a great heart. He's a good individual. And to be honest, without him having this opportunity to sit in the seat he's sitting in, he would have never, would have seen that from this perspective.
Oh, I think the reason there's a $30 million opioid, that whole thing is because he sat on too many living rooms at 2 o'clock in the morning with families that were impacted.
He has. And also, people don't realize that, you know, with the work he's done in Arizona and Texas and seeing what actually comes across our borders and how it affects up here, up north.
Oh, there's no doubt. And by the way, no matter what your political stripe, you should read his book
because
he tackles the drug problem that we have, the immigration problem we have. And you know, you start off with, no, this is a I hate Trump book. Oh, no, this is I support Trump book. They can't put him in a political because he's not.
Nope.
It's about solving the problem. And it's a fascinating read. I had no idea until I got to know some of the drug and addiction, you know, folks pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And traveled with Sheriff Buffett out to Denver and, you know, met with all, I mean, just how much. I mean, you don't realize in Central Illinois, I know there's some people that will make fun of this, that immigration, but that's why the book's called A 50 Border State.
Exactly.
Would people be stunned to know that a kid who gets shipped back to Honduras is back in Central Illinois 3 days later?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, a lot, but, you know, again, that's why people need to actually educate themselves and read the book and to have those serious conversations and not just, you know, what you hear, educate yourself.
Yeah.
We have to do that.
But the drug thing, I mean, it is, you know, the victims, you know, I like the fact that we're figuring out a way as a society that it certainly makes a lot more sense to treat drug addicts as people who need to be helped and fixed rather than incarcerated because of the money that gets wasted. I mean, why would you not want these to be productive citizens again who pay taxes and you know, have jobs? That's important.
You're exactly right. We cannot arrest our way out of this. We cannot. And I also tell people a lot of times people don't realize something's an issue until it happens in their household. This here has literally hidden every household in some kind of way, you know, or, you know, it has. You have the cartels as far as being business individuals that actually studies have been shown that they don't target areas that actually have addiction treatment centers or what have you. And that is a win-win for us. Also, we're talking about as far as infrastructure with the sheriff's office and the jail. Now we actually have a partnership with Crossing Healthcare.
Yeah.
These are the individuals that are going to see this population.
So because most of your population there, and you know because you were in charge of that facility,
yes,
part of your career,
yes,
he either have a mental illness issue or an addiction issue or more than likely both because one's being used to self-medicate the other. And prison, you know, guys in that jail, I mean, you're not trained for that.
No, we're not. And I tell you what, and this is something that recidivism, as I talk about, we need to do a better job as far as identifying individuals when they come into our facility to realize they actually need the type of help they need and to make sure that we actually put them to those services. Because if they're not receiving those proper services, they're going to continue to come into our jail system. And how is that helping anyone?
No, and then people that don't understand the addiction level, that people will then commit crimes to feed that addiction. I mean, it just keeps rippling out and out and out. At the same time, what do we do with drug dealers? I mean, I feel like you got to have this incredible leniency over here or this ability and path to correct people, and then over here there's like no room for it.
No, there isn't any. Individuals like that need to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of our law, of the law. There's a lot of things that, you know, we need to – You have individuals. I'm glad now that you look in, as far as with the circuit clerk's office, now they're doing this, the expungement and the sealing of records.
Yeah.
With individuals that may have done something 20 and 30 years ago, and they're still being judged to this day because of those, and they've changed. So you have individuals that may not be able to get into, you know, great paying jobs or whatever because of that. And, you know, that plays a factor as well as far as why some people do the things they do.
But why do the courts not take, you know, drugs? I mean, if somebody's got, ammunition or bullets or guns, you get the book thrown at you.
Right.
If you got 400 potential overdoses in your car, why is it not treated the same way?
It should be harsher. And you ask me, because you got, that's 400 deaths that you have in your possession right there that you can actually do. It's amazing. Again, it's like, if they see this happen in our household, I guarantee that they'll be a lot different about that.
Well, I think one of the things, and if you look at the stats, and I know you've been on this opioid task force and you know, most of the sheriff's office and all of the folks that need to be in this, you know, if you look at the number of overdose deaths over the last 10 years, there's really not much of a difference. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the number of overdoses, it's skyrocketing. But because of Narcan and the ability for these emergency rooms to bring these people back to life, you don't see the death toll that you would with the number of overdoses that we have. So I think people would be stunned what an ER looks like on a Saturday night at 2 o'clock in the morning.
They would also, and thank goodness for the Tyler Yount Foundation with Kathy and Mike and all the work they've in education they've done as far as
because their own family
they have and again it hits their household, so therefore we're educated. We actually, as far as our deputies, we carry a Narcan. And we have a different mentality when it comes to dealing with individuals with drug addictions. We do. And I'm so grateful for that, as far as us to be educated and for, you know, people to start looking at things a lot differently. You can't arrest our way out of it.
All right. How do we recruit the next generation of law enforcement? This is my biggest concern. It's not just in law enforcement. By the way, if you go to the IBW, they'll tell you the same thing about electricians. You got kids not following career paths, and then the vilification of, like, you know, law enforcement nationally by, you know, some political, but mostly the media just buys into the narrative. And this whole idea that we do this with everybody, we don't treat people as individuals anymore. You're just a group. You're Republicans or you're Democrats or you're law enforcement or you're, you know, protesters or whatever. How do we get those young kids to be interested in becoming law enforcement officers?
We need to show up and let them get to know you. I look at it as far as the how they started the ag program in schools. You know, seriously, you look at it. That same model could actually be, you know, formatted to, you know, suit law enforcement as well.
Yeah, you got to show kids that they could be that. And
exactly.
Then, you know, like I see, like Bruce, you know, becoming an auxiliary police officer at the Boys and Girls Club and what that means. I mean, I think it's hard to put it into understanding for most folks. Just having that kid there going, it's okay to be associated with
exactly.
this.
Exactly. I tell people, I said, you know, the way I grew up, you look at statistics, I probably shouldn't be where I'm at. I mean, as far as where I grew up, you know, being adopted or what have you. But I just want to be able to let these kids know that you could do the same exact thing. You know, you have to, you know, dream big and to have individuals in those positions that's willing in order to do whatever they have to do in order to help you.
Well, I think it's got to be a two-way street, right? You can say that law enforcement's responsible for so much of it, but I think the public has to be responsible too. I know for a fact you guys have invited people out to run simulations and put a gun in their hand and show them just how difficult life is like. Mm-hmm. How eye-opening has that been for people who participate?
It's very eye-opening. I had an individual, we had taken him out there, and they were asking the questions, why don't you shoot in the leg or the arm? He kind of tell them about how you had to be responsible for where the round goes. And we put him in a scenario where it was an active shooter into a school. He went into the school, and he accidentally shot three kids in the back. And when he got done, I was talking to the group, and I looked over at him, and I asked him, was he okay? He shook his head. He said, I have no idea. About a week later, because we was in a partnership with this group with some community activities, and I asked him, what did you think about that officer-involved shooting? He said, I have absolutely nothing to say after going through what I went through with that.
And that's a simulation, not the real thing.
That's exactly. Yeah.
I just think more and more of that is going to be necessary.
And that's exactly what we're going to do.
All right. So you've got a couple minutes here, Tony. You're running. Obviously, it's 12 days. I'm sure you're counting down. You could probably tell me how many hours are left.
Minutes and seconds if you want.
What do you do this last 12 days? Anything different, or you just keep doing what you've been doing?
I'm going to keep on the grind, just what I have been doing, just to make sure my message is out there, let people know as far as the amount of experience I've had. As far as working in the jail, over a quarter of my career has been working in the jail. Over the last decade, I've been sitting at the table with other command as far as with our budget to do that. Also, that the responsibilities I also have, just to look at, I've literally worked in every position within the sheriff's office. And if I have not worked it, I've supervised it. So I have the full gamut.
All right. Do you think that the no matter what happens, that the department will come together?
Oh, always.
I mean, because there's a natural, even if you guys have been very respectful of each other, and you have, and I appreciate that. I think most people do.
Right.
That, you know, there's still going to have to be some healing.
It will. But you know what? We're family, and that'll never change.
Yeah. All right. How do people get involved with your campaign if they want to help out at the last minute?
Contact me. Go to my website. Just go to checkchubby.com, and it'll take you to my platform, which is Facebook, and just send me a message.
All right. Have you had fun at all?
I had fun.
You're a people person, right?
I love people.
Yeah. but you guys are kind of like the judges. They come in here, and they're so sheepish because they don't want to be seen as politicians. You know what? They got to get elected. I applaud both of you guys for running a campaign about the issues, and wish you nothing but the best of luck on Election Day.
Thank you so much.
Tony Brown wants to be your sheriff. I still can't call the guy Chubby. You've been called Chubby your whole life.
My entire life.
This isn't a political gimmick, by the way.
No,
you're
it's
a cute
not.
Nickname.
I had to put that on there because some people don't know me as my real name. They just know me as Chubby.
I get it. Well, at least you didn't change your name. Was that Cash Jackson, the libertarian guy's coming in? What's his real name?
Benjamin Winderweedle.
Winderweedle.
What?
So he went to
wow.
Cash Jackson, action hero. I love that. All right, Tony, good luck to you. We're going to take a break for the news. When we get back here, we'll give a preview of our final two Charlie Tens tonight and tomorrow night. Newhoff Media Night at Boo at the Zoo. Bring all the kids out. Nice, safe way to come out and collect extra Halloween candy. We're bringing the extra candy with us. And then tonight we'll be at the Girl Scouts Diamonds and Desserts, honoring Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and the other diamond honorees throughout the years and eating lots of dessert. Here's Jeff Daly with your news.